Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, MeQ is a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and you get stuff back in the end. www.mecu.com is a website, or you can just go to steinershow.org, click on their banner, and all the information will be right there. Keep your money in the community. Okay, enough of that, but to get to our conversation here. As you know, we do Urbanite radio stories. Urbanite magazine is one of our literary partners, our magazine partners, our print partners, I should say, in Baltimore. Their latest issue in February had an article in it on empathy that was written by Martha Thomas, and it's called Walking in Someone Else's Shoes. And that the subtitle is Many Baltimore Groups Believe the Answer to Some of Our Local Problems Lies in Teaching Empathy. The latest neuroscience research indicates they may be onto something. And many people think we've lost what it means to be empathetic in our world today, that we've lost it for many reasons, whether it is all the technology in front of us, the lack of family for kids, whether you come from wealthy families to poor families, and the separation we have in this society. There's a big difference between empathy and sympathy, and there are people in this community who are working not just to bring empathy back and to teach empathy, which is what some people are doing, but also to use that empathetic idea to create a world where young people can learn how to speak to each other, communicate, and also keep many of our young people out of prison. 410-319-8888 is our number here. We are joined in studio by Lauren Abramson, who's Executive Director of Community Conferencing Center. Been a guest on the show many times in the past. We've covered community conferencing in some depth. Lauren, good to have you back in the studio.
It's good to be back. Thanks, Mark.
And Selwyn Ray, another good friend, who's Vice President of Community Engagement and Partnership for Big Brothers and Big Sisters and the Maryland Mentoring Partnership. And Selwyn, welcome. Good to have you.
Always my pleasure, brother.
And he doubles it at the Charles Street Market on Saturdays with his lovely wife selling Ethiopian food, but not tonight. You want to grab and put that mic a little closer to you, man?
So absolutely.
There you go. Good. 410-319-8888. So as we kind of explore this idea of empathy this article is talking about, there's a difference between the notion of empathy and sympathy. Let's start with that.
Right. And very specifically, empathy allows you to step out of yourself in an imaginative state almost, and vicariously go into the experience of another person. So even though sympathy sounds just as intense, it doesn't take you as far into the other person as empathy does. Sympathy can happen from a distance. In other words, oh, isn't that sad? Oh, that must have hurt. Empathy takes you there, so you almost feel the pain.
And in this world of empathy, I know we were joking earlier before we went on, Lauren, you're not going to deal with the theoretical aspects of empathy, but it's the practical aspects of it. But I mean, the part of the issue is here. I mean, do you both think that something's happened in this culture, maybe many cultures, where we've literally lost the ability or losing the ability to be empathetic, especially in younger generations?
Mm. Well, I think I not only think it, but there is research to back it up. I just found out about a study out of the University of Michigan where they looked at students, 14,000 students between 1979 and 2009, and they measured empathy, and it decreased by 40%.
What does that mean, measured empathy, and it decreased by 40%?
So they give they'll give you a series of questions and ask you, you know, does this apply to you? And the questions on personality tests that have, you know, they were two di- – they I think they used two different ones that have been standardized in a variety of different ways. And just on those, it decreased by 40% in 30 years, between 79 and 2009.
So if you – I mean, what are some examples you can think of when we think of empathy? I'm trying to lay this out for our listeners to think about. You know, there's always the Good Samaritan piece that was in this – that Joe Ehrman talked about in this article. But
I'll give you a good example. I was coming here, and I absolutely didn't want to be late for your show, but there was a long line of cars in front of me. I needed to turn left at Hill and Road. I pulled up about four cars back, otherwise it would have been 20 cars back, and said, sir, I'm running late for my friend's show. Can you let me in? He immediately said no, and then humorously said, yes, of course. I said, I'm going to mention you on the radio station because that's a perfect example of empathy. But there was a part of him that said no. And that has to do with something that's happening in our community, and that is young people have lost the notion of looking outside of themselves because we taught them to lose that notion, and they think me, 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 me. But empathy talks about you, others, and everything else.
Well, we accuse a lot of young people of being not non-empathetic. Especially we seem to accuse a lot of inner-city kids, children of color, as being non-empathetic. I think it's way beyond the issue of color, obviously.
Yes, sir.
But a part of that has to do with, I mean, we live in a culture where it feels as if constantly everything is corrupt around you. You know, that nobody has, that we have a culture which says, there was something happened today where in Arizona, where young people who go to community college were in front of the state legislature, and they were testifying because they have a bill before the state legislature in Arizona that says no student can go to any community college any longer in Arizona unless they cough up $2,000. So the young people there are going, look, we work our way through. We have scholarships. We're borrowing money, but we don't have the kind of money. We're poor. We want to go to college. And the response to one Republican woman legislator to this kids was, get used to it. This is life. And that's what's all around people all the time, is that kind of mindset. And it just kind of trickles down, as Ronald Reagan would say, to everybody else.
Exactly. And when you learn from your family certain things, you carry them into life. But when your family, which could mean your schoolroom, which could mean your Sunday school teacher, which could mean your neighborhood, has lost itself and has an existence in a world that, as you said, is saying everything's corrupt, you can't trust anybody, then the young person becomes afraid to step outside of himself and give. But the young person will give to his peers that are in that innermost circle. So it's simply a reflection of what they've been taught to do, and that is to fear being open, to fear being like we used to do in the 60s, or many think we did a lot in the 60s, and that's, you know, feel free about peace and love and giving. Now it's look hard, look mean, and if a guy asks you to get over in the lane in the red light, tell him no, because he's getting ahead of you.
And unless we give people structures and spaces to be empathic with one another, they don't have a time and a space to be that way with one another. So let me just give you an example. Yeah. In a second grade classroom at Montebello School a couple years ago, we've been training teachers to do something called the Daily Wrap. And it's a simple dialogue circle to get teachers to be non-directive and non-judgmental and just circle up with their students, whether it's at the end of the day, or this teacher was doing it once a week in her second grade class. And the students could talk about whatever they wanted to talk about. So she didn't even start doing this until January of that year that she started doing it. And I want to give a big shout out to Robin Palomares, who was doing this. And in her second grade class, as they were going around in this one daily wrap session, one of the students said, I don't get enough to eat. Because what they're giving me at school for breakfast, they're giving me the same thing now for lunch. I don't even get a full lunch anymore. And they kept going around. And Robin found out 3 days later, just by accident, that there was another classmate, another 8-year-old, who started bringing that kid 35 cents every day. And there was another girl who started giving him part of her lunch. And they didn't come up to her and say, Miss Palomares, look what we're doing. We're helping out our buddy. She just happened to find out about it. And it was only because they had a space to share with each other. And when they do, they come through with the goods like crazy.
I think you were quoting the article. Maybe it wasn't, John. I think it was you quoting the article, Lauren, saying that this become a radical notion for people to talk to one another.
It's a very powerful technology that we just don't use enough to sit and talk with each other. I mean, you know, well, there's been articles written about how air conditioning has ruined neighborhoods in some ways because people are inside all the time. They're not out on the stoop. You hear all sorts of stories when we have a blackout about what people talking with their neighbors. And yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that. I had a very wonderful elderly neighbor. He taught here. Dr. McKinney.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
He was almost 100 years old when he told me this. And I was speaking to him about preaching the gospel, and he told me, hurry up, don't wait. But he said to me that there was a time when he and his family and others would sit around the dinner table and communicate. He said that, as Lauren just said, is when we got our information and got our wisdom. He said, but now, and it touches me even when I repeat it, he said, now everybody comes into the same house, grabs their plate of dinner, and goes to their separate room to watch their separate TV. Maybe exaggeration, maybe not enough. But the fact of the matter is we have a situation, and I want to just quote this wonderful lady, Mother Teresa, a great instrument, once called a saint. She said, I'm no saint. God is writing with me. She said something very simply, and I want to read it for us to hear it. And it speaks to what Lauren just said. Abandonment, that's what our young people must feel, is an awful poverty. There are poor people everywhere, but the deepest poverty is not being loved. And we use that word and think it's not, and that's why I mentioned the 60s. But if a young person doesn't feel loved, how on earth do we expect that young person to empathize, even with its own pain? Some of our brothers, all races, as you say, are walking around in so much pain, they can't even feel their own pain. That's a heavy state to be in, let alone being empathetic.
It's true. Folks, join us here, 410-319-8888. We're talking about empathy. I mean, how do we – can you teach empathy? Can it come back to us? Are we really losing it? What does it mean to be able to kind of work out and forgive and change? It was a piece we played, by the way. I should have read that, got this up for us, but I didn't, so it's my fault. But there was a piece we played here a few weeks ago, and it was a piece by this woman, her story. Her son was killed, murdered, in a gang violence, and she went to prison and looked at the guy who killed her son, who was also a child, who killed her son. We were both boys of 14 years old. And over a course of time, she kept visiting the boy who killed her son. He's now out of jail, a man, in his late 20s, I would assume, maybe 30, late 20s, lives next door to her, has become her son. And she's living through her son through him. I mean, that is a story of empathy. It's not sympathy, because she was hard on the boy, because who killed her son, but this is that's empathy.
An emptying of self and stepping into that mystical realm of being like the creator and being able to go beyond yourself to actually feel some pain, because that was some pain that woman went through to sacrifice on that level. And that's what we've lost. Everybody is chasing after something outside of them,
right,
and not doing the inner work to find out what's really going on inside. Some young people have lost the ability to shovel their elderly neighbor's snow, not because they can't shovel, but they haven't been taught that way.
Or they want $5 to do it.
That's another point.
There's not the space to do that inner work. I mean, we are asking teachers in schools to take 15 to 20 minutes one day a week to circle up and let their students talk about what they need to talk about. Do you know how many teachers are afraid that they're going to be punished or admonished by their administration because they're not right on the academic track? And the whole thing about being able, like, our schools should be helping our young people learn how to be self-reflective and to do that not only within themselves but with their peers. And there's no space for that in the schools, in the curriculum.
On the way to open these phones, but Lauren, there's one example used in here, and I think it's really important to talk about this. The example in this article, which you do dozens of times a day, and people who work with you do dozens of times a day, and dozens of times a day in community conferencing. There's a story in the article about a woman who comes out of her house in the east side of town looking for a truck. Her truck is gone. And it's stolen, and the cops catch up to this young kid who stole the truck. Instead of going to jail, he and the woman who he stole from and the others involved came to you. So talk a bit about that for a minute. Give a sense of what empathy means in action in terms of healing and changing.
Well, so what we're trying to do is when somebody causes somebody else harm, we're trying to ask a different set of questions than our current system asks. What we currently ask is who did it and how can we punish them? And we're trying to ask a different set of questions because we're not getting good outcomes by asking who did it and how can we punish them. We're asking who's been affected and how can the harm be repaired and prevented from happening again. So with community conferencing, which we've been doing for 13 years, we get cases diverted from the court system at a variety of places in along that system. And we bring together those who've caused the harm, those who've been harmed, and their respective family members and anybody else who's been affected by this. And we sit them in a circle and we let them do that very radical thing, which is to talk to each other. And first, there's a structure to it. We first hear what happened. So the young people who stole the car have to tell the story about what they did. Not why they did it, but what they did. And then they hear from everybody in that circle how they were affected by
it. Who's in this circle?
Everybody. Their own family members or somebody to support them. Everybody has somebody to support them. You know, we had a teacher come because her school was broken into over the weekend. She came in on a Sunday and she didn't know if the kid, you know, whoever did that was still there. Her mother ended up coming to the conference because her mother said, I don't want you ever going into school again on the weekend because it's not safe. So her, you know, in that situation, her mother was there telling these three kids who broke into the school, this is how what you did affected me. So everybody who's affected is in that circle. You know, empathy is sometimes called perspective taking. So you've got this multifaceted jewel. You know, every side of it is a different story. And so everybody gets to hear and paint a very full picture of what happened. And once everybody has spoken, then we ask, what do you want to do to make this better? And by then, victims who come in wanting jail come out deciding to mentor these kids. And the kids who go in being all bad butt, you know, right. End up in tears because they connect with an actual human being. And they connect what they've done viscerally in their body. They see and feel what they've done and how that's affected other people. It's a whole different story when they come out of there.
410-319-8888. We're going to explore some of the science behind this, but also talk about how we can kind of create and teach empathy. We're going to reflect a bit on the show we did the other week with PM Forney, who was here talking about civility and how that fits into all of this we're talking about. 410-319-8888. Maybe some of you are teachers. There's a comment on email we'll get to here. I mean, on Facebook. You can join us either on the Mark Steiner Show Facebook or on the Mark Steiner Show Facebook or the Mark Steiner Show Mark Steiner Facebook, excuse me, page. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Call us at 410-319-8888. And Clarence, you're on the air.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Steiner. How are you?
I'm well, Clarence. Welcome.
I remember once on your show you made a comment about love thy neighbor, and I responded to you, said that I won't try to love my neighbor, but I will be considerate in all things in reference to my neighbor. Empathy is kind of like too complicated for me because when you just have simple consideration for people around you and your neighbors, and then that comes even before you get to something to me as complicated as empathy. You know, that's a whole different realm to me. But we are teaching that. I remember once hearing Snoop Doggy Dogg say, when he was on a TV show, a national TV show, I don't care anything about those bees. And those type of things, you know, set a mindset in kids. They, you know, they feed on that. And if somebody's not correcting that, you know, then they don't have consideration or, as you put it, empathy. Even if you look at politicians, this morning I heard Newt Gingrich say that, you know, in reference to the Qurans being burned, that no apology was necessary. Well, that's saying that, well, we don't even have to consider how other people feel or we don't have to consider that. And that's basically what's happening throughout our society, you know, even through the media. There are no Little House on the Prairies on TV anymore. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Selman.
I heard exactly what the gentleman said, and he said something very powerful. He mentioned the word consideration, and that word assumes that you're looking outside of yourself. the only thing that love does when you enter it into the equation, it takes that consideration to a higher level, i.e. the next door neighbor that has a newspaper out front that's 90 years old. When you are doing your morning walk, you pick the newspaper up and place it on their steps. That could be called simple consideration, or from another perspective, that could be called love.
Or letting you turn off a hill and road.
410-319-8888. And let's think about what this empathy means. We'll talk about some of the experiments that have been taking place. We'll also kind of explore even in greater depth some of the work that's being done by both of our guests and that Lauren Abramson does at community conferencing, and how that works, and how there are why there are 700 young people now who are not in the juvenile system because of the work that she's been doing and the people around her have been doing. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Aaron, you're on the air.
How are you doing today, Mark?
Very well. Welcome.
Well, you know, in listening to you and your guests, one of the things that comes to my mind is in order, before we can get our young people taught empathy, we've got to teach their parents and the adults around them the empathy, because in a lot of cases, a lot of their parents and the adults around them don't have it. You can't expect the young people to have it if the adults and the parents and their parents don't.
He's exactly right, Mark. If I may interject, as a mentoring advocate, I won't say expert, I want to remain humble, but having mentored for many years and seen the products of mentoring and having many mentees who are now transformed, he's exactly right. Old Deacon at a church I attended a while back used to say, people don't do better because they don't know better.
And in a lot of cases, you got to remember, a lot of these children's parents aren't much older than they are.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And they don't do better because they're not taught better. So he's exactly right. However, there is something inside of young people that I believe comes from their originator or their creator that's there to be mimicked in life. And all we need to do as adults, as your gentleman, as Aaron is saying, is give them that little guidance, that little trajectory, that retro rocket that pushes them in the right direction. And the stamp of approval is already there and the image is already there. But what's happened is it's being masked by that fear and that attraction to materialism versus enjoying a smile or a conversation, as Lauren said earlier.
That's true.
And we do have it as part of our biology. I mean, we have a limbic system. We are mammals. We bond with our young, and we bond. We are social beings. There's no way around that.
I think the problem is, if you watch in a lot of these young people, and of course, this internet age has a lot to do with it as well, because they don't interact with others most of the time except on the internet. A lot of their parents don't have empathy. And therefore, you can't expect the kids to do it.
That's true, and I think that you make some strong points. I think that is part of what we've kind of lost a lot in our culture and society. And I think that it's, you mentioned the internet, which we'll talk about in a bit, because that's a lot of what separates us, because we're all like stuck on this internet, and we don't really see each other, talk to each other.
When I was a kid, you had to interact with others. These days, you can go on Facebook, and Lord knows what else, they talk to people.
Right, and you don't really talk. I mean, you're not really having a conversation with people.
No, you're not really. And I've always said, there's nothing like a human touch, talking to someone or getting a letter with somebody's handwriting for me. But then again, I'm considered old school.
Aaron, thanks so much for your call. Right. I appreciate you being a part of the show again.
And the other part of that is that you not only don't always have a conversation, but you don't have to be accountable for what you say over the internet. There's nobody right there that's going to check anything that you say. And so an awful lot of the serious fights that we end up handling either directly from the school or from the court system or from the police, they either started or they've been fomented on the internet. And people are saying, you know, young people and it's not just young people
right.
are saying all sorts of things on the internet because you can just put it out there and you don't have to be accountable for it.
We'll take a very brief break and come back to our phones at 410-319-8888 as we explore empathy. We'll explore a great deal more about community conferencing in our community, how that can change the nature of dialogue and change, and how it saves the lives of a lot of people, not just by keeping kids out of the system, the juvenile system, but creating whole human beings in the process. We'll talk about all that and more. And also, when we talk about the limbic system, we'll talk about the experiments being done on amazing experiments with rats, with Franz de Waal's work with chimpanzees and bonobos. He's been a guest on the show many times talking about that, how it goes way back deep in the recesses of who we are as beings on this planet. and how we have to how we can relearn to get it back. 410-319-8888 is the number. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. I'm going to tell you this before we jump back into our conversation, that WEAA presents the Zimbabwe Shona Stone exhibit tonight. Now, it's curated by Beverly Carter and Louis Hudnell, who will be here. And we're saying tonight because this is the closing. It's February's exhibit. It'll be closing out. This is an amazing exhibit of modern Zimbabwean art from the Shona people. Just these are not old African art from Zimbabwe. These are new sculptures that are just amazing. So we encourage you all to stop what you're doing. Come on over to WEAA, check out the exhibit. The lecture is taking place at 6:30 tonight. It'll be here till 9 o'clock tonight at WEAA Studios. If you get here, you can watch my show and then watch the next show through the glass as you're looking at the exhibit as well. So just come on over February 28th today. It's from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at WEAA Studios. It's sponsored by AXA Advisors. And just come on over and check it out. And don't miss it. It's an amazing exhibit of art that just will blow you away. So we're talking this hour about empathy. It's one of our Urbanite Radio stories based on an article by Martha Thomas in this month's Urbanite magazine called Walking in Someone Else's Shoes. We are joined in the studio by Lauren Abramson, who is executive director of the Community Conferencing Center in Selwyn Ray, vice president of community engagement and partnership for Big Brothers and Big Sisters and the Maryland Mentoring Partnership. 410-319-8888 is the number here. On the way to the phones, you wanted to say something, Selwyn?
Yeah, I was just thinking, Mark, about the whole notion of connection that we're talking about with the wonderful callers and their thoughts, the realm of love. And one component, because you asked a wonderful question at the beginning, Mark, what's going on, essentially, with our young people? And when trust is broken down in a society, everything else breaks down, or many other things break down. When trust exists in a society, in a relationship, things can happen on a positive level. And I think about mentoring relationships where a caring adult steps into the life of a young person, and over time a trust relationship is built, and then ultimately a love relationship gets built. And you can't title it mentor-mentee. My mentee, who's now 31, who I met when he was 12, calls me his father now because it's beyond trust. So I think part of what we're talking about is a spiritual connection where we step outside of ourselves and step into a higher realm of connecting. And I bring another quote, and this will be my last quote.
That's all right.
From a wonderful monk who lived on this earth. He was born about 1909. Wrote in the 50s, and his name is Thomas Merton. He wrote this, and this goes back to our caller Aaron that mentioned the notion of consideration. He says, and we can place the word woman in here, but it says, a man cannot enter into the deepest center of himself and pass through that center into God unless he is able to pass entirely out of himself and empty himself and give himself to other people in the purity of selfless love. Now, how can we as a society step into the realm of freeing our young people when we're afraid to talk about selfless love?
Mm. Right.
And if I can just – that's beautiful, Selwyn.
It is.
It just reminded me of in South Africa, there's a concept of Ubuntu. And the idea behind that is the only way that I gain my sense of my own humanity is through my relationship with you.
That's powerful. That's true.
And it's true.
So let's see what our listeners think. And then I'm going to bring something up that came to this morning, made me think of what's happening to our kids that took place, but a video put out by Too Short that was pretty heavy when it came to what it was telling young men to do to young girls. And then how he was pulled up by Dream Hampton and the conversation they had. I'm going to raise that to everybody here, see what you think. 410-319-8888. And Andrea, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi,
welcome.
Thank you. Well, I was just saying, as you know, from a teacher working in social services, I think we have such a great opportunity to connect the dots between us, our students, and family. And you can, you know, the great thing about being a teacher, you can be so outside the box. You know, I've I always take time to debrief with my kids before, at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day. Because, I really don't think the whole problem is our kids. I don't think the whole problem is that we have a bunch of bad parents. I think the whole problem is that this society is so pressed to have to work and pay bills. And, especially here on the East Coast, it is a rat race. I'm surprised half the population in debt from a heart attack. I mean, it really is, and you sit in traffic. And so I think the whole disconnect is just people don't talk anymore because you just want a few minutes to yourself. But I think as a teacher, you can encourage parent involvement and, don't be lazy and send out, okay, here's a newsletter, I did my part. Talk to them, give them a call. I teach in the classrooms and I work as a mentor. And I call, before I co-signer show, I call one person every day. And I just check in, hey, how you doing? This is Miss So-and-so. During debrief, this is what the child was mentioning. And then use Facebook to your advantage. I let all of my students Facebook me. I know ethically we're not supposed to, but, it beats the other unethical of teachers sleeping with kids. I think Facebook and seeing what those fights are about, you can stop it right then and there, during debriefing. Like, hey, what's all this going on? So keeping that communication going with each other, when they're face-to-face, they can see how this really affects versus, just putting it out there in cyberspace and it's done, and it turns into a larger thing where someone fights or they kill themselves or they shoot someone. So I think as a teacher, we have so many opportunities. You can stick little labels on your six-year-old back called Car Talk. And, get that conversation going. Get that dialogue going.
Thank you, Andrea. It's always good to hear from you. Glad you listen to us every day. It's good to have you on the air with us.
Oh, thanks.
Let us go to a couple of the callers here, and then we'll come back to what we're saying so we can hear what people are thinking out there. Lynette, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon again.
Hi, Lynette. Welcome.
Well, thank you again, Mark, for just such a wonderful topic for us to explore. I wanted to ask your guests if they know of any local or national communities of teachers, and specifically college teachers, who are teaching or beginning to teach from this platform of empathy, personal coaching, and all. I ask it because I recognize many years ago teaching at a private college and a local community college here that my students are coming in with a lot of issues. And the only way that I could begin to support them in being successful in the class was to address those issues, which meant that I had to exercise a lot of empathy as well as to incorporate a lot of coaching in my class. And fortunately, I was able to find a few other professors who are also teaching from a coaching platform where you really get to connect and establish relationship. And as you said before, establish space in the classroom for students to just talk because they want to just talk and share their stories. And when they do that, to witness the empathy among students is phenomenal. But we realize, my colleagues and I, that we are such a minority. When we try to share our, the coaching techniques we're using and the results we're seeing by opening up sacred space for these students to talk, to share their stories, that people look at us like we just dropped in from another solar system. we were talking about this last week. We said, well, there got to be other teachers in the country who are, doing what we're doing.
Well, let's find out, just see what our guests have to say.
What I was going to briefly say, Lynette, is I commend you for stepping outside of a zone of comfort and doing something creative, and I do not know specifically about any of those societies. I can look into it because I do have some forward-thinking teachers that are working with people throughout the nation, and I can look into that. But I would simply suggest, as we have seen in the past, as you said, when you do what you do, people look at you like you dropped from another planet. You have to keep doing what you're doing. And if what you're speaking of does not exist the way you want it to, create it, make it happen, and keep building. It sounds like you have a wonderful foundation, and all it takes is your collective wisdom and make it happen. But I will, advise Mark, look into that because I have someone that I think I can ask about that.
Go ahead, Lauren.
And just a last thing, I think we were talking last week, why are other professors so afraid of this? And we concluded that, it requires them to shift and to begin to care and connect in a way that maybe they aren't willing to. It's scary for them.
Yes.
They want to, show up.
Right.
Indeed. Lynette, there are definitely people out there, and I would recommend that you just Google restorative practices in schools. It's a bit like groundwater, but there's a movement that is flowing that not everybody can see. But people are starting to bring this into our education to create, as you say, sacred and safe spaces in schools where the students can show up and be who they really are and be very participatory in their education process and in their personal growth process as part of that. And, you know, schools, I just read, I think the New York Times last week had an article that the lecture format is dying in favor of, you know, what we're shockingly learning is that participation helps us learn a lot better and deeper. And so a lot of colleges are giving up the whole lecture process.
And it's interesting what you just said. I just Googled, for want of a better term, that's the term we use these days, right? I Googled restorative practices in schools, Lynette, and I also Googled teachers teaching empathy. And both, when you do both those things, there's a whole list of places and organizations to go to where people are doing this kind of stuff. There's transformativeconflict.org, Safer and Saner Schools. There's a number of places here that are on the web. All you have to do is kind of Google those two things. Google either restorative practices in schools or Google teachers teaching empathy, and there's a bunch of things that pop up right there. So 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let me read this before we go back to the phones, Chris, and give it to Chris and Tawanda, our next two callers.
Thank
you so much, Lynette. It was sent to me this morning, and I thought it was almost like perfect for what we were talking about today in some ways, but what we're doing to our children's minds. There was a piece that was sent out by colorofchange.org that I got this morning, about Too Short, who's a 45-year-old rapper who's been in the business a long time. And the video came out where he was encouraging young men, young boys, in middle school years to turn girls out, to push them up against the wall and have their way. And it raised a real firestorm with a lot of people when that came out. And to me, this is part of what we're doing to kind of change the way that what we're doing to negatively affect the way young people think. When you have figures like that telling young boys what they should do and can do to young girls against their will. And then he was apparently pulled up by Dream Hampton, who grabbed him and had this conversation with him and really kind of sat him down and talked to him. He then came out later, not apologizing, but saying what he learned. About what another person goes through when men do these things that he's talking about, even though he says, I'm not telling people to do it. It's like stories from how I grew up. So, I mean, but this is part of
transformation.
Yes, and what's happened to us.
It's definitely part of what's happened to us. I mean, we have so many community conferences around sex in schools, in bathrooms, in stairwells.
Yes.
And in high schools, middle schools, and elementary schools. And sometimes it's not consensual, and a lot of times it's consensual. There, among our girls, there's this sense that the only way that the girls can have a sense of their own of themselves is by giving themselves over sexually to a boy. And so what we've had a lot of these either community conferences or daily raps with girls who have been bullying at each other around over boys for months and years. And by the end of 2 hours, when this has been going on for maybe 2, 5, or 10 years, at the end of 2 hours, they are all in tears talking about times when they've been violated.
The bullies are talking.
The bullies.
Right.
10 times out of 10, when we do a bully case, by the end of the community conference, the bullies are in tears talking about times that they've been bullied. They finally connect that the way that they're making other people feel, that's how they felt at one time.
And Mark, as Lauren makes that wonderful point, I'm reminded in what you said, the success of that story between Too Short and Dream Hampton is that, as you said, he was pulled up. And part of what's
right.
missing today is not enough of that pulling up is happening. As we say, we speak as though all of our young people are lost. Certainly that is not the case. We have wonderful young people, but we don't have enough wisdom being extended back to them through their adult leaders, and therefore Dream Hampton sounds like a dream, as opposed to that's the way it has to be. In other cultures and other communities, the elders make the rules, and that's what's missing too.
Right. You'll hear an interview Thursday night I did with a young man on the Wind River Indian Reservation last week, who wrote to the New York Times because they painted this picture of Wind River as a place of murder and crime, and which it is. It's there, alcoholism. But he wrote this response to the New York Times, this young 19-year-old kid from the reservation, lovely young man, and spoke about there's another side to this. And part of what he talked about was gathering people in groups to talk through things, to help people, listening to elders, finding different ways of doing things, going back to the roots of Native ways to cure the pain.
And I just
and that'll be Thursday evening here.
We often refer to our work as being the flip side of the wire. And 10,000 Baltimore residents have safely and effectively resolved their own crimes and conflicts using community conferencing. 10,000. This is the same. These are in the same neighborhoods that The Wire was written about. And so I make the point that David Simon has made, that we're shaped by the institutions that govern us.
Right.
And it's a really simple point, but it's so powerful. We've got to create structures and spaces for people to be human with each other.
And that's part of what we will talk to David Simon about in the next hour. He'll be here in the studio, and we'll have an interesting conversation with him about The Wire, Treme, the difference between those two shows, what he's trying to say, and what he's seen in his life. 410-319-8888. Mary, you're on the air. You've been trying to get through, and there you are.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I'm proud to say that I raised a son in this dog-eat-dog town, 19 years old, and he made it out of here in one piece, you know, and still keeping him in prayer. But while I was raising him, right around the time that Kobe Bryant and Michael Jackson both had their little altercation at the same time as the niece. He had to write a paper. Mind you now, he was in the fifth grade at this time. And the paper said, and I read what he wrote. He said, what Kobe Bryant did, it was more like boys will be boys. But what Michael Jackson did was out of order. I said, well, wait a minute. I had to stop that bus right there for a pull off too far.
The elder spoke.
Yeah, I was saying it kind of like, you know, just let him know, you know, you cannot justify whatever Michael Jackson may have done, and you want to say what Kobe did was like boys, but he say boys will be boys. He said she asked for it. That's what he said. Fifth grade now, and my fifth grader at that time going to say she asked for it, that's what she did. Come on now, where you get that from? Well, not today. I don't have that child today because I saw it was something that had to eradicate and step on it quick before it got to be a fire in his soul. And today I'm glad to say that my son, he's in college, he's at the Art Institute, and he's handling his business for being a young man.
Thank you, Mary.
It starts at home. And believe you me, I had his name on everybody's list for mentoring. You think they stood up for the job? Nah, you know. So, I guess I said all that to say, you know, sometimes you have to go within yourself and do what you have to do to raise your child, you know, especially when it comes to our men. You know, it's definitely a code that's in this town to destroy the young men even before they grow. And it's very rarely you see a nation of people get hit at the same time.
Right.
And hopefully one day, you know, we'll come to our awakening. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Mary, thank you so much.
Mary has spoken a great truth. But what we also have to realize as we speak about this dog-eat-dog town or this terrible earth, that this is our only earth. As you spoke about the elders on the reservation, this is our time. This is our earth. And indeed, what she did with her son was her duty. And what she indeed got from it was an elevated presence on this earth. And what we must realize is that certainly this isn't a perfect world, but we create the world every day. I said I wasn't going to make another quote. But
you will.
But a wonderful German philosopher, Goethe, said, if everyone would sweep in front of their own front door, then the whole world would be clean. So each individual has to take personal responsibility for being creative and imaginative and stepping into the other realm of changing this planet.
Thank you, Selwyn.
I won't quote Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, you can't. I love Jimi Hendrix. 410-319. What did Jimi Hendrix say before we go back to the phones?
Jimmy said, to go along with what Mary just said, he said, up in the clouds, I can imagine UFOs chuckle to themselves, laughing. They say, you people are so uptight. You sure know how to make a mess. But what we're going to go is beyond that and change the world as he did when his message of love.
He also said, communication, freedom of the soul. Pass along to the young. And old.
Exactly.
410-319-8888. Land of quotes tonight. I like it. Chris, you're on the air.
Hello, Mark.
Welcome.
Yeah, one thing that I want to talk about, I'm riding the bus right now, and I didn't start using public transportation until about 10 years ago. I'd driven all my life, and after a couple of years, I came to refer the automobiles to Great Insulator.
Mm-hmm.
And about a few years after that, I read a book by Michael Harrington called The Other America.
Oh, I know that book very well. It changed my life when I was a kid. I remember that book, yes.
And he said that the automobile was the greatest insulation in this country. But a couple comments I want to make. I went back to college in my mid-50s.
Uh-huh.
And I took a speech course. But in that speech course, they commented on the empathy, and they said that children, it's an inequality in small children to experience empathy. And riding on the bus, kids, I was hit by a car, my legs are scarred up something terrible, I mean really bad, and I would notice small children looking at my legs, and they would have an expression on their face that I couldn't interpret.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that they just thought maybe my legs looked really ugly, but I came to find out after reading this piece that they were actually experiencing my pain. And also, I'd like to comment on another experience.
Right, one more. We have a ton of callers. We only have like 5 or 6 minutes left. I'm sorry, Chris. Go ahead. Tell the story.
Excuse me?
I said tell the story. We only have a few minutes left, but please tell the story.
That's okay. I'll get somebody else.
That's all right. We can hear it.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, there's been 3 different instances while I rode the bus where the people were black. The other time it was a person that looked like Hispanic origin. And they were looking at my legs with genuine concern, came up and asked me what the problem was. And it turned out that all 3 of these people had migrated to this country, 2 from Africa and the other from Latin America.
Uh-huh.
And what they thought it was from war. These people were all experienced war, but the thing is I had acquainted myself through reading about what was happening in Africa and Latin America.
Right.
And these people really they were genuinely happy that I had taken the time to read about what was going on in their countries.
Well, Chris, you've told some really, I think, very powerful stories. Selwyn is not – go ahead, Selwyn.
Chris, you're wonderful. Keep spreading the truth and opening yourself up, because the pain that you experienced in that accident can help people open up to your pain and therefore share with each other. And you are attuned enough to see that in other people, and that's part of why it's beautiful to ride the bus.
Experience.
It is. Chris, thank you so much, brother, for being on our show today. Let's get a quick call here. Tawanda, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. My comment is similar to the caller, Mary. I raised a son by myself. I did call big brothers and big sisters around the time of when my son was about maybe 10 or 11. They put him on a waiting list, and they were apologetic because they did not have enough mentors for him to choose from. In fact, they had none. So he was put on a waiting list. My son is now 19. And what do you do as a single parent, especially raising a black male child, and there's not enough for him to do after school? When they get to a certain age, then they start working. A lot of people will not allow them to work. They'll choose girls over boys. And then they fall into peer pressure. So then you have that entity to deal with. The recreation centers are closing. They're closing libraries. And my son is still struggling a little bit now with getting his life in order.
Well, so Tawana, let me just, I'm only interrupting because we have like literally 2 minutes left before we have to break. And I want to let someone kind of jump in here, something to say.
Real briefly, Tawanda, you've done a stellar job with your son. Never give up. Part of it is being creative and using uncles and next door neighbors and anybody else. That waiting list situation is horrible. We're working on that. We're trying to change that. But what we have done is created this mentoring network where we have a collaboration of programs. So if you can share your information after you give it to the operator, I will call you and connect you with that situation so that that organization, that process, so your 19-year-old son can have some of the mentoring advice and guidance that he needs.
So if you hold on, we'll pick up the phone and we'll get your information, give it to someone after off the air. And Lauren, in about a minute or so we have left, I really have to turn back and make sure that we get the power of community conferencing and the work you do out here for our people to walk away with.
So, I mean, I'm just so heartened and proud of the people in Baltimore for showing that in, you know, a large American inner city, that if we give people a reasonable way to handle each other and to talk to each other in really dire circumstances after crimes and in the midst of conflict, that people can really come through with incredibly powerful outcomes and connecting with each other. We've diverted each year for the past several years, over 700 young people from the juvenile justice system. And in the studies that we've done, the reoffending rates are 60% lower than if they went through the system that we have now. And I guess on some level, it costs one-tenth of what we're currently doing. So it's biological justice. It's justice that takes into account our biology as social and emotional human beings, which our current system really keeps out of the whole process. They separate people. We include more people, and we encourage people to say what they need to say.
So next time we do one of our Re-Envisioning What Baltimore Should Be shows, you have to be one of the guests on the show. One of the topics we're going to tackle.
That'd be awesome.
I want to thank you both for being here. Selwyn Ray, Vice President of Community and Engagement and Partnership with Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Lauren Abramson, Executive Director of Community Conferencing Center. Good to have you both here. And you can read Martha Thomas's article, Walking in Someone Else's Shoes, in this month's episode of Urbanite Magazine. This has been one of our Urbanite radio stories. And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbanLightBaltimore.com. We'll be right back with David Simon from The Wire. Don't go away.